This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 17th, 2013, episode 574. As you know, we are live Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays here on Horses in the Morning. Tuesdays and Thursdays, we bring you recorded episodes from around the Horse Radio Network. And today, we bring you a show that just came out this morning, actually, the Stable Scoop Radio Show for this week, episode 231. And it's titled, What Your Farrier Wants You to Know. Helena and I had the opportunity to speak with Jeremy McGovern, senior editor of the American Farrier's Journal, and Dean Moshier, a farrier based in Delaware, Ohio. And Dean gave us the top 10 tips your farrier wants you to know, the top 10 things your farrier wants you to know. Plus, we had Cat's Recipe of the Month, and we had Field Boots on the Tack and Habit segment. So I think the morning show audience should enjoy this, especially the top 10 things your farrier wants you to know. Helene and I didn't even know a couple of those, so we were glad to have them on. They were a lot of fun. So enjoy this. We'll be back again live tomorrow morning here on Horses in the Morning.
Welcome to the Stable Scoop, with weekly shows delivered right to you. With Helena and Glenn the Geek, live from the stable, it's every week. They're bringing the news through hail or high water, while using their tails as their own fly swatters. Sit on down and laugh till you're pooped, cause it's time again for Stable Scoop. Stable Scoop. Stable Scoop. Stable Scoop.
I'm Glenda Geek.
And I'm Helena B. And you're listening to the Stable Scoop Radio Show on the Horse Radio Network.
Well, howdy, Helena.
How you doing this week?
Good, good, good. It's been good so far this year, especially here in Florida. but yeah, we've been having a good time down here and enjoying no snow.
Enjoying, I know. I saw that your wife got to go on a beautiful hunter pace the other day, and the weather looks fabulous.
It was the first ever Horse Radio Network hunter pace team. Her and Wendy from the driving radio show went out and represented the Horse Radio Network, and neither one of them ended up in the dirt. That neither one of them had dirty pants, so we were proud.
No dirty pants. That's every rider's goal. No that's dirty right. pants.
I don't. We didn't win anything, but that's fine.
No. Somebody had once said to me. We talked about, I think I had said the term dirty britches, and someone said, what a great name for a horse, dirty britches.
That would be a good name, actually.
I think I've had a couple horse. Of those. Yeah. An ex-thoroughbred. Ex-racing thoroughbred. So hold on a second. So Jen and Wendy go, they both their britches stay clean. They had I need Wendy's horse right there. What's his name? Duke?
Duke. Yep.
Oh my God! Only a veterinarian's horse can look like that.
He is a very and Jennifer said he's cute. He's half Arab, half they call him a sport cob. He's cob sized and he's half Arab and half warm blood. And he's very striking. And all our horses, all those sport cobs are very striking. And she said the entire way around the course, people kept stopping her and asking her about her horse. So.
Oh, I was like, my tongue rolled out of my mouth. And like, I need that horse.
He's a cutie.
Wow. And in such like good health. And yeah, he's a looker. All right. Perfect for Wendy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. The two of them make a good couple.
Yeah.
So she said Beaker got our horse, got no attention whatsoever. It's just a plain redheaded quarter horse. And Duke got all the.
And that trace clip wasn't quite enough, huh?
No. And not quite straight either.
we've had some funny clips in our time. I remember some really scary ones at Myopia.
Well, and she had the clippers that weren't quite full size. So by the time she was done, even with the trace clip, it was the blades were dead, and you know, so it was one of those clip jobs. But he needed it. It's still pretty warm down here, you know, at 85 degrees, and he's got his full winter coat because he's not used to Florida yet. So,
yeah, how long do you think that takes? Does Jen know?
Well, according to my brother, whose horse has been here now three years, this is the third winter. She is finally starting to not get the full winter coat.
All right, that's not too bad.
So two or three years, and he'll be fine. In the meantime, he's out there going, "I'm dying here."
So. Jen might have been the same way. When was the last time she hunter-paced?
That's true. That is true. It was fun. They had a good time. I was glad they got to do that. Okay. And this weekend, we're heading out to see Wendy again near here. And Ocala is the show season for drivers starts. So we're going to go out and watch driving trials where they do the dressage marathon and cones. And it's not too far from here. And Wendy's going to be navigating for somebody. That's a crazy person that stands on the back.
Yeah. Why do you think they're crazy?
Oh, because it's just nuts doing that job. That's a dangerous job because you can actually end up getting hurt in that job, falling off and whacking.
Can't you just jump out the back though?
Whacking
That's what
your
I would
head
think.
On the obstacles, and I mean,
whacking your head on the obstacles
because they lean so far.
Whoa!
Yeah, I mean, it's there's stories about navigators getting hurt, or you know, if they're in charge of making sure too that the carriage doesn't flip over on those turns. So if they screw up, then their driver and them are under the carriage.
They're like ballast.
That's exactly what they are. Yeah, they're moving ballast. So, yeah, so that's fun. We're looking forward to going out and seeing a little marathon this weekend.
Cool.
It'll be a good time. Well, we have a busy show planned for today, so let's get right to it. We have Kat from Eat Your Tart Out coming on with our monthly fun recipe for horse people. She is presenting easy-to-make but yet tasty recipes that horse people can do after getting done with the barn every evening. That's coming. She comes on once a month with us. And then we're going to the world of the farriers. We're going to be talking to Jeremy McGovern, who's a senior editor for American Farriers Journal, about a annual event they have coming up very shortly. And then also he got one of his farriers to come on here. His name is Dean. I think is it Moshe? Yeah, it might be Moshe. And he is a farrier based out of Delaware. And he's going to tell us the 10 things every farrier wants horse owners to know. So I'm excited to hear from those guys. They're always a lot of fun. And then we have our Tack and Habit segment where Coach Jen is joining us to tell us about a product that she used on the Hunter Pace and whether she got her approval or not. So,
excellent.
All of that's coming up. Let's start with Kat from the Eat Your Tart Out blog with our food of the month. Well, hi, Kat. Welcome back to the show. I've been enjoying eatyourtartout.com and all your posts over there on Facebook, but I think I've gained 10 pounds just looking at your posts.
Well, I'm happy to be back, and I'm happy to be the one who is giving you all the extra weight gain.
Now, of course, you're going to do a regular segment with us every month because all of us, you know, us horse people are not only involved in horses. We have to eat. And at some point we have to cook. So, you know, a lot of us, you know, I do the cooking. A lot of guys do the cooking in the horse women's lives. And that's my case. And so I enjoy this a whole lot. And you have a recipe for us that looks wonderful today.
Yeah. Well, I think with us doing this segment on a regular basis, I'm trying to keep in mind, you know, what is the typical horse person's lifestyle look like? You know, typically they don't have a ton of time. You know, they're trying to throw something really yummy together. And this is for guys and girls. Like, I just want to create recipes that anybody can make, you know, regardless of your skill level, but that makes something really delicious, you know, for you and the entire family. So the recipe that we're going to talk about today is called Philly Style Stuffed Peppers.
All right. Sounds wonderful. My mom used to make the traditional stuffed peppers that I think she got from her mom that were the rice and hamburgers sort of.
Yeah, and they had like tomatoes in them, and I never liked them at all. They were just
me.
Like, I remember eating them when I was younger, and that's how I always remember stuffed peppers. And you know, when you go to a Mexican restaurant, you get stuffed peppers as well, and those are pretty good. But you know, I saw this on Pinterest. It was kind of a green bell stuffed pepper, and it had like a cheesesteak in the middle of it, and I was like, oh my gosh, that looks amazing. And I kind of decided I wanted to make it my own, but make something that's really easy and really tasty, you know, especially for the horse people that don't have a lot of time, you know, during the week. And it's really, really simple. You just basically are taking a green bell pepper, you're slicing it in half, you're taking out all the seeds, and then you're putting the insides filled with, you know, whatever you like. And that's the beauty of what I kind of put in my blog post is that you can do anything from steak to mushrooms to onions to garlic to cheese, and more cheese. Or for somebody who might be a vegetarian, you can opt to leave the steak out and you can add all sorts of different things like mushrooms or maybe a stir fry mix. So I really tried to cater this for everybody's taste. And a lot of it is if you just got stuff that goes well with a pepper, you can throw just about anything in it, top it with cheese and put it in your oven and you're set to go. So it's really easy.
And so let's go over it real quick.
Yeah. So basically, my general recipe that I kind of went with it is just you're using your peppers. You have a little bit of olive oil that you're going to use to simmer some garlic, onions, and mushrooms in. The steak hopefully is already cooked already because you don't want to throw the raw steak in there in the pepper once you bake it. So I just, you know, for this recipe, it's already pre-cooked. So you combine the steak with the mushrooms, onions, and the garlic. And then you stuff that in the peppers.
You put a layer of cheese. Cook it to about medium, maybe, the steak?
Yeah, you cook it for about 15 minutes. It's not very long because what you're doing is the bottom of the pepper, you actually layer a piece of cheese in there, and then you put your steak and your mushrooms and all that in there.
Okay.
And I usually wait because I found that when you put the cheese, the top layer of cheese in there already, it kind of melts off and you don't get it on top of your pepper as much as you would like it. So I found that, you know, you just do the bottom layer of cheese and the steak. You cook it for about 15 minutes at 350. You pull it out. You top it with another piece of cheese. You do it for an additional 15 minutes, and then you broil it, and you're done.
Okay. And so you've got Worcestershire sauce in here. You have steak sauce in here. You have red pepper flakes. So it should have some zing to it.
Yes, and that's why I said a lot of this is optional. Some people might say, you know what, I don't want to put the steak sauce in there, but I might have teriyaki sauce. You can absolutely kind of cater this to what your needs are and what you like as, you know, with your steak. And so that was just kind of the beauty of it. But it gives it a little bit of zing, as you said, just so you amp up the flavor a little bit because there's not very many ingredients in there at all.
No, basically you've got your steak, you've got onion, mushrooms, and cheese. I mean, other than your spices, you don't really have a whole lot of anything else.
No, but that's most people, they find that their steaks actually taste better when they just season them with salt and pepper. And that's kind of why I was keeping it so basic in this one, too, is that it's so basic. And it's very simple for anybody to throw together. You don't need any special ingredients to put this together.
Now, I'm not a fungus guy, so I could just take out the mushrooms here and put something else in. Like, I might take out the mushrooms in this case and put in some red peppers.
Right.
You know, instead of mushrooms in this one, and you could have the steak and red peppers and the green pepper then too. Then you truly do have a Philly cheesesteak.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's why it's so fun because I just, you know, the more I thought about it, I'm like, you know, now this kind of pepper isn't like, you know, your grandmother's stuffed peppers. You can really do a lot with this recipe and make it so it can be your own. Like I even said in some of the comments that I had in there, you know, if you wanted, you could put sun-dried tomatoes in there. You could choose different cheeses if you wanted, like jalapenos, to make it even hotter.
Or if you want to make it a true Philly cheesesteak, you could use Velveeta.
Exactly.
Oh, you know that old argument, which one's right, you know?
Oh, it's so true. When I was in Philly, we definitely went to the two places. And it's hard because, you know, you have to get it. You have to order it a certain way, and it's either with provolone or with the cheese sauce. And yeah, they're very, very,
so which did
very
you like
loyal.
Better? Did you have a favorite?
I had Gino's was my favorite.
Yeah.
Okay. So I did like that. And it was definitely with the cheese sauce. You have to kind of do it very honoring the Philly traditions of doing it that way. So.
Well, and you know, that cheese sauce has to have so much MSG in it that it just makes you love it.
But it tastes so good.
I know.
So it doesn't really matter.
That's why chili cheese fries taste so good.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, this is very good. Well, we'll post this link on our Facebook page over at stablescoop.com. We'll post the recipe, and we'll also post it in our show notes as well. So it'll be both places for the Philly-style stuffed peppers. And you can find this, if you want to see pictures, you can head over to Eat Your Tart Out, and that's T-A-R-T-E. out.com, and you'll find the Philly style stuffed peppers there as well, and they do look absolutely wonderful.
Well, thank you very much. And if any of your listeners and any of you guys who are listening in right now want anything, you me to create something special, if you have a special diet you want me to follow, or you want me to use an ingredient for something, please feel free to reach out to me or to Glenn, and I will, you know, get something together for the next show.
Very good. Thank you, Kat. We appreciate you being on again. It's eatyourtartout.com or search for Eat Your Tart Out on Facebook. Well, right after this word, Helena from Equestrian Collections, we have Jeremy McGovern, Senior Editor of America Farriers Journal, and Dean Moshe, I'm not even sure how to say his last name, we'll find out, and he is a farrier based in Delaware, Ohio. And he has a website called thebalancedhoofandhorse.com. And we're going to talk to those guys about a number of things. Hi, Glenn here, founder of the Horse Radio Network. And I am with Debbie from the Equestrian Collections with the Equestrian Collections Product of the Week.
Hi, Glenn. This week, I want to feature the Winter Cozy Helmet Cover. Everybody out there probably already has a fleece helmet cover, but they don't have one like this. This is just the cutest thing. They've taken the basic design, the lycra part goes over the helmet. A lot of the fleece covers used to be fleece all the way around. This is much easier to get on your helmet. It's a lycra, like most of the helmet covers, you know, regular helmet covers. And then it's got the fleece that comes around and velcros around your chin. You can also pull it up if you want to a little bit, but the difference is that they have colors. Instead of always being black, these come in a whole bunch of fun colors, and the kids love them. At the barns, they're just, for $13.95, they are just a really fun thing, and the kids like to wear them in the winter, and it will get them out to ride a little bit more if they're not so cold. So I have one, so I thought maybe your listeners might enjoy these as well.
So it combines a helmet cover with a scarf.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Only better because it velcros so it doesn't flap around or anything. Really easy to get on and off. I actually got one for my trainer for a Christmas present because he keeps wanting me to build an indoor. And I can't do that, so I got him one of these and I said, here's your indoor.
Here's your $13.95 indoor.
Yeah, exactly.
These are $13.95. They're called the Winter Cozy Helmet Covers from Equestrian Collections. Just go to EquestrianCollections.com and do a search for Winter Cozy and you'll find them. Well, hi, Jeremy, and hi, Dean. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi there.
It's good to have you both on. Let's start with you, Jeremy. You're senior editor of the American Farriers Journal, and I will say that I got to ask a question first. Let's start with this question with you guys, because it's been a burning thing on our shows here on the Horse Radio Network for the last 2 years. And that is, Jeremy, could you say the word H-O-O-F for me, please?
I'll shoot it, but I am from Indiana, so I get criticized here in Wisconsin. I'll say hoof.
Okay, and now, Dean, how do you say that word?
Yeah, hoof.
See, I say hoof, and my co-host on the morning show every time says it's hoof. It's not hoof. So
yeah.
Even you two disagree.
Yeah.
Tomato,
tomato.
I'm sober now, too. It may change later.
Is there an
I've been hanging out with a British farrier, so there's my answer.
Now you're the American Farriers Journal. Is there an official pronunciation of that word?
No, but that'd make a great article.
It would, wouldn't it? Okay, just
might,
give me credit, okay?
It might get me in more trouble than doing barefoot versus shod, though.
Well, actually, Glenn, I will share a story with you. This was actually a $60,000 question once upon a time on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Really?
And the question, of course, was, what does a farrier do? And of the four answers, of course, one of them being correct, was crosses boats, makes furs, and polishes rocks. The person gets polishes rocks.
Yeah.
So I guess that would also be dependent on whether you said farrier or furrier rather than farrier.
Well, I went to the Merriam-Webster online dictionary, and they have this little icon that you can click, and they'll pronounce the word for you.
Yes.
And the lovely woman there says hoof. Hoof.
Ah, wow.
Now, she could be from, you know, Connecticut.
Right.
Who knows?
But I guess we're being upstaged by Webster.
I know. Like they know anything.
Yeah, like they know anything about horses. All right,
they create words and put them in the dictionary.
I do that too.
Now that we haven't solved that age-old question, Jeremy, what is the American Farrier's Journal, and tell us about that?
Sure. We publish 8 times a year. Essentially, we're a trade publication for farriers. Roughly in U.S. and Canada, there's about 30,000 from our estimate farriers.
Is there really that many?
Yeah, both full and part-time. Of course, you know, I think it is an industry that has a high attrition rate. But we do everything with our publication from, I think, practical business advice into the latest research, new ideas, alerting people about new tools, better use of tools, anything that is, in essence, goes into a farrier's business.
And now, did you have a background in farriering?
No. When people ask me if I'm a farrier, I'll say, how lame do you need them? My background is journalism, ag journalism.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're in the right place.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're glad you're not working on our horses then.
Yes.
What did you call it, Glenn? For farriering?
Farriering.
What's the proper term? Well, it's hoof care because, no, does a farrier necessarily have to shoe horses, or is, like, my horses just get trimmed. They don't actually wear shoes.
No.
Call her a hoof care specialist. But could I technically call her a farrier?
She actually is, Helene, and that's absolutely correct. We've had a lot of terminology crossover that needs to cross over now as we get into some folks get out there and start promoting more of the barefoot trimming and the importance of a trim, regardless of whether that horse is shod or not. But anytime really they're picking up a foot, collectively we're all farriers at that point, whether or not there's metal involved. In fact, we have many composite-type shoes that are out on the market as well. We'll glue on or nail on too. So it's not about metal anymore.
And you know, we used to say
on so many levels.
You used to say blacksmith, but now we've kind of changed that. You know, dating back to the 1800s, we've kind of changed that because the blacksmith also made essential, useful things for the household out of metal.
Right.
And
correct. Yes, you're absolutely correct.
There still are blacksmiths, but a blacksmith is not necessarily a farrier, and vice versa.
Absolutely. You have that definition at 200% correct. I explain that to clients a lot when they do refer to me as a blacksmith, and I'm really not a blacksmith.
So that actually leads to a big, that opens a huge can of worms here, and I'm going to go there. Glenn's like,
There goes the show.
Shh. We have so many pieces of equipment that we use for riding and training and caring for our horses that just have not changed in hundreds of years. A lot of it is metal, but technology is, it comes to the horse world slower than it comes to other worlds. But I do see this, like we have new materials, we've got composites, we've got all different kinds of pads now for horses. What do you see as being the most effective or the types of products for horses' feet that have made the greatest inroads into such a conservative industry?
My answer for that would be the Equithane line products from Vet-Tech. Their line of polyurethane products have really changed some of the ways that we glue on, do repair work, pad the bottom of a foot. So I would say collectively that group as a whole. And we have some sideline groups to that as well. But the Vet-Tech probably, I would say, would be the forerunner in that.
And Jeremy, you've obviously had articles about that. What do you think?
I agree. It's dangerous ground for me to tread on because you know may get the advertisers angry. But no, absolutely. I think with what we've seen in adhesives has been such a tremendous advance, and not only in attaching shoes, but also in what we're doing with rebuilding hoof wall and giving more area to work with.
Now, you guys do at the American Farrier's Journal, you have a meeting that you do every year and have been doing it for quite some time. Tell us about that.
Yes, the International Hoof Care Summit. It's held every year toward the end of January, early February in Cincinnati, Ohio. And we bring together about 800, mostly farriers, but some equine vets, vet techs, and really the whole mission is hoof care. We get together for 4 days, and there's general sessions and classrooms and discussions that we'll have, and we cover really the whole gamut of hoof care, anywhere from tackling certain riding disciplines, some of the research going on throughout the world. And it really is, like I said, an international event. We had farriers from 41 different countries last year, and a wide representation from the United States, of course.
Now, this is different. This is an educational thing. It's a little different than a farrier competition. I was able to do a show. I did a show live at one of the farrier competitions in Kentucky. I think it was a national farrier competition. That's a little bit different because they're competing on their skills. Here, this is an educational thing.
Correct. It's all education, no competition at all, although maybe some competition in how guys will argue.
I'm sure there's some competition.
That's only in the bar.
That's what I was going to say.
And there's always one nearby.
The last lecture is actually held in the bar, by the way. It is absolutely amazing, though, the way that the Hoof Care Summit is structured. It is extremely learning intense. With PowerPoint presentation and even we're adding some hands-on things this year, that it's amazing that with that schedule running late those couple of nights, literally everyone does get up and they go down to the bar and it continues. And you know it's a farrier event when around midnight last year, I know Alice has got the photographs to prove it, and that is X-rays broke out.
Whoa. Yeah. That's awesome. That's like geekdom to the nth degree. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he was going to say, you know, it's a farrier's convention at the bar when they're all a little hunched over.
No, we start standing up straighter then.
Yeah. No, they're thrilled not to have to sit any longer in the seats in the general session.
Yeah. Have you found this to be, you know, there with 30,000 farriers out there, have you found over the years, Jeremy, that farriers are getting more interested in learning more? Or has it gone the other way?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you could look back and, you know, this the main organization in the United States is American Farriers Association, started by Walt Taylor. And at that time, I think it was a very different thing where you would show up at a riding barn and, you know, the other farrier there would maybe fold up what he's doing and leave or kind of cover up. It's a very different world now. Farriers are very interested in sharing information. We certainly couldn't put on a conference like this without guys like Dean who are very interested in sharing what they learn and are more willing to learn from others. It's no longer, you know, this is the way I learned it from my dad who learned it from his dad.
Yeah, and Jeremy's absolutely right with that, and it's been a wonderful evolution for me over these years as well. From coming to those first events, you know, being the more of the meek one in the corner, trying to absorb all that information, and now I'm starting to assume more of a mentor role now myself, and helping others now. So it's been great to continue that.
You, Dean, and Jeremy both, you've seen new people coming into this profession all the time. What is the one thing that they are most surprised about and are, you know, sort of shocked about when they actually get in and doing this for a living?
Well, if I can go first. I
go ahead. Yeah.
What it typically is how much business is actually involved. Whether they were apprentice or went to a shoeing school or both, they get a fairly good education on the practices of farrier, on the mechanics. But so much of this, you know, as Dean said earlier, how hard is it to return a phone call? But that seems to be, you know, a real problem for a lot of farriers is just general business sense. And I think that's something that a lot of farriers really struggle with early on.
Absolutely, and this is where venues such as the Hoof Care Summit are so valuable, because you need to understand how diverse the topics are that are covered there. I mean, we're talking about not only some of the basics, but some or in-depth basics, but we're talking about therapeutics, but we're also going there. We're talking about the business and the weaknesses that farriers are going to have in that area, down to we have for several years had a lawyer come in and speak to us as well, even about whether we're talking about getting the proper insurance or liability insurance to disability factors, things that we just normally as a profession just don't give a thought to during our day.
That's a good time for these things to be covered at the conventions as well. Do you have seminars at these annual meetings, like things that cover business topics?
Yeah, absolutely. And Dean mentioned the attorney. It's Jamie Cooper. She practices law in Houston. Her husband, Matt, is a farrier as well. So she's very much in tune to the legal needs of a farrier. I'll have to be careful how I word this. Her lecture this year is when the blank hits the fan.
Yeah.
What you need to do when you need a farrier. Last year it was she covered a topic regarding things you needed to take care of before you die. So, both the legal needs are very important, but we also have some other ones. Dave Dawson, who's a very successful farrier from Ontario, has an interesting title lecture of how to become a million-dollar farrier. And his approach is, what business skills do you need if you want to achieve the highest level as a farrier?
Well, and it's just like any other business. Being a farrier, you're in the customer service business. You're not in the horse service business. You're in the customer service business.
Absolutely.
And we all are. I mean, those of us that have owned large boarding stables, we weren't taking care of horses. The horses were easy. It was the people that were our problem. And there are just some good ones and some bad ones in every industry. I mean, it's just the way it is.
But they're trained here too. The passion and the training is all focusing on the care of the horse, and this happens a lot in the equestrian industry in general. Whether you're training or you're taking care of horses' feet, or even for veterinarians, there's that element of business that's missing. I mean, I call them kids, but some of these up and coming business owners, they're coming from college backgrounds first, with degrees in business. And then they're sort of marrying their expertise in horse care with that. But there really isn't some kind of organized business training, either for farriers or for, trainers or riding instructors. You have to kind of go to your individual professional organization. But in which case there is one. The American Farriers Association does help with that, right?
Yes. And there's also there's a few organizations. And another key one is the American Association of Professional Farriers. They do a terrific job and are supportive of education too. In fact, many of the farriers today that I meet that are successful have come from a previous career, and it is anywhere ranging from computer IT all the way up to things involved in the equine industry. The interesting thing is I was out with a farrier one time, and it was a very nice day. And he said, "I feel sorry for you because, the weather's great here, and we're out here driving, and you go home and you're stuck in an office and you have to report to a boss." I said, "Well, being in Wisconsin, going back in January, I'll agree to the weather thing. However, he has more bosses than I do."
Yeah, so every customer.
Right.
Yeah.
And not only that, and I think, Dean, you'll back me up on this, at the end of some days, because one of the things that we have noticed over the years is that horse women especially love to puke all over the farriers. And what I mean is in a psychological fence or psychological way. In other words, every problem they have had since they saw you the last time, you're going to hear about.
Yes, and my joke to them is that they have to pay me for the farrier work, but the Frasier part is free.
How do you think that began? Why is it that women feel so comfortable telling all their life secrets to farriers?
Well,
you are so treading on thin ice.
I know, but Helena, I am going to go there a little bit, and I'm going to say, you know, back to our customer service.
Set him up for that one.
And you're absolutely right. You know, we need to, as an industry, understand, and this is where I think that some of the barefooters have gotten a hold, because a lot of the folks calling themselves host technicians are women, and women communicate well with women, and we need to understand that at least 90% of our clientele are women. We have to communicate well with them. That's a very important, just as important a skill as the shoeing, because if I cannot convey to my owner what I'm doing, how I'm doing and doing it, and why I'm doing it, it does not matter what I do to that horse or that foot. If there's miscommunication, there's not going to be the trust factor there.
That's amazing. And there's women all over our
audience. Oh my gosh,
yeah. Like, communication,
yeah.
Check.
Yeah.
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 That's what they're looking for in their husband. What are you talking about?
I know.
Yeah.
But it's true.
So that's just being, that part of that communication, you know, it's, you know, understand too, you know, part of the reason that, you know, as Glenn pointed out, you know, these women do tend to vent and unload is that, you know, we're in that barn atmosphere. We are away from the office and we're away from that, those stresses that they have at the office, and they do come to the barn to unwind. So, you know, we need to be cognizant of that as far as in our barn atmospheres. You know, we all know of barns that there's barn drama at. And, you know, folks don't like, you know, some of the owners don't like to congregate at those barns because they go to there to relax when they are unable to. So that's just part of the decompression part of the day.
Well, you're right. The barn is a, for a lot of people, it's their recreational space. It's your professional space. So they are going to be more at ease in talking and engaging you in a sort of semi-social way. But also, you know, like you said, women are very communicative. So whether they're talking, like for me, when my farrier comes, I'm having a conversation about the health of the foot. What did I do? You know, what have we done since the last trim? What kind of work are we doing? What's changed? What's, you know, 6 weeks has gone by. And honestly, you know, those feet are the most important part of that animal. So
yeah,
you want to wait.
No horse.
Right. So you kind of want to make sure that what you're doing is that everything's copacetic. And sometimes that takes a verbose conversation.
And there's also a lot of hot farriers out there. And we all know there's whole websites for that. So
I heard about that one on Facebook. Yes. That's dedicated to farriers. But
yes, yes, yes. And I have to admit that we helped propagate that one. So.
Oh, lovely. I actually had a farrier friend of mine that, as you know, on Facebook, you can like, you know, the certain pages, and then it comes up that you like, you know, the certain page. And I had a farrier friend that decided to like that Farrier's Butts page on Facebook. And I said, you do understand it now says that Chris likes Farrier Butts.
All right.
Who doesn't?
Before we run out of time, I want to get to the, and Dean, oh, by the way, this conference coming up, where can people find out more about it?
They can come to our website, AmericanFarriers.com or IHCS 2013, and it'll give them all the information on the agenda, how to register next year's event, as well as the hotel and everything that you need to know when you arrive in Cincinnati.
And that's coming up on January 29th of this year, of this month, a couple weeks.
Correct.
This will be this year's. All right. Thank you for that, Jeremy. Now, Dean, before we run out of time, we have to hear the 10 things every farrier wants a horse owner to know. And I know that goes the other way, too, but we're going to stick with this one today.
Yes. Okay. So I sort of got my David Letterman top 10 list here of all things.
I don't have
clients.
Any music.
Now, the first one, The first one's actually sort of for you, Helena, because you were just touching upon that, and that was top 10, be observant. You can prevent shoe loss if you see that you've got a shoe that's sprung. You can certainly observe foreign bodies in the foot, hoof cracks, major chips, that sort of thing. One of the things that's ironically been new this year, even though it's old technology, is now I encourage those clients when they do observe something to take a snapshot with their cell phone and send it to me, because they're all worried and upset that they've got something going on. And in an instant, I can use my farrier eyes to say, no big deal, see you next appointment, or I'll be right over. So
that's
my number 10. Number 9. Make sure that if your horse does have any behavior problems or a range of motion issue, that you let your farrier know before the work begins. I can't tell you how many times I've had owners say after I'm done working on the horse, wow, he's never stood like that before. Well, that would have been useful information. Number eight, you might want to consider exercising your horse before the farrier arrives. It can make an older horse more limber and a feisty younger one calmer. And it helps keep both the farrier and the horse in the upright and locked position.
All right, hold on. I have to say that I thought that I knew what I was doing when it came to being a good client. Never even thought of that. So simple. Never, ever thought of that. Cannot wait to do it. And not that my horses are bad, but I love the idea of limbering up an older horse.
Absolutely. We actually have some of my ones. Now, I've gone all computer on in my farrier business that we've actually got some horses sort of bookmarked that we need to even remind the owner when I text them the night before that, you know, make sure to get, you know, Frosty out, you know, half an hour before I get there and you know, make sure you're ready.
I had a Hackney pony that was a roadster pony.
And cool.
I got him, saved him is what I did. And you know what they're like after going through the training they go through.
Yes.
And he used to stand up on 2 feet the entire time the farrier was there. So I used to get the reminder the day before. We used Kava Kava on him, and it really worked for him for when the farrier came out. And so I used to get that reminder the day before. Remember the Kava Kava soup or Kava Kava tea in the morning? So he used to get tea that morning.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. All right. Number seven, provide us with the best shoeing environment possible. This means a barn with an open, quiet aisleway, free from obstructions. Dogs do not count as bonus objects. We'd like to have those out of the way as well. And hopefully that area is, we need that area flat and hopefully matted, but it's got to be well lit. I don't shoe in Braille. So easy access to the shoeing truck is a bonus with this. When you consider how many trips back and forth I may have to make to the truck and back to your horse, and it's really bad when I have to run a marathon just working on a couple horses. So that's a consideration.
Oh, and you're in Delaware, too. You get all the mud.
Yeah, God, we have mud season. Speaking of that, we're down to number six, which is have your horse caught, clean, and ready at the appropriate time. Have the feet cleaned and picked out. Muddy or wet feet and legs are, I kid you not, they're like trying to hang on to a greased pig. So some of these folks think they're helping me out by spraying off the horse, and if they had done it previously that we could have dried the horse, that would have been helpful, but you know, muddy feet are just an absolute mess. And they're also not only hard to hang on to, they're extremely hard on our tools. Nothing is worse for our farrier tools than any sand, dirt, any clinging mud or dirt is just really hard on the nippers and the rasp.
How many people don't have their horses in and ready to go when you show up? What would you say the percentage is?
Well, that's a loaded question because I have my owners well trained because I do provide very good customer service, and my clients can set their clocks by me. So my owners are ready to go, and they expect me to be on time. I am on time, and I expect them to be ready. So it's a two-way street. So, you know, if you know, you've got a good relationship with that farrier and you know he's going to be there, then absolutely. You know, it's easier for me to respect your time when you respect my time.
Very good.
So, number five, do not turn any horses out while the farrier is working on the horse. Horses are herd animals. Think of them as Christmas lights. When one go out, they all should go out.
Okay.
Number four, do not feed any of the other horses in the barn while the farrier is working on a single horse. You too get wiggly when you're at the restaurant and after you've ordered and that food arrives and you see it coming and it goes to the next table. So.
Okay. I didn't think about that. Do you think about that, Alina?
No, I didn't.
I didn't either.
Yeah. Yeah. That's actually quite a big one. The horses get really wiggly when that happens. So number three, we're down to number three. Do not feed him treats in an effort to make him stand still. You are not a treat vending machine.
That's gotta be a tough one. People love to do that.
Yeah. I know they do. And they do start getting really wiggly because they'll start leaning towards the owner and even whether that horse is tied. And then if you're hanging on to them, sometimes they'll start coming towards you so much that now I'm starting to chase them around the barn. So now we really need him. He needs to concentrate on what I'm doing with him, not so much on the owner.
And I got to tell you what's made it worse, and I'm sure, Helena, you found this too, because didn't you get some stud muffins, Helena, this year? We had a sponsor by the name, or Stud Muffins was one of our sponsors.
Yeah, I just
this year.
Gave some away for clients as Christmas presents.
Oh my gosh.
They're awesome.
The horses go crazy for them, though. They'll kill for those things.
Yeah.
I see what you mean.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So we're down to number two, although I do have a bonus here beyond number one. Number two is please do not groom your horse while the farrier is working on him. I can't tell you how many times I've left the barn looking like a Yeti. And yes, it's happened. And then they get to the owner gets to the other side of the horse, and they see you covered with dirt, grime, and hair, and they're like, "Oh, I'm really sorry about that." Yeah, yeah.
Do that before.
Number one.
I'm a little stunned that somebody would actually groom their horse while there was a person under it. But okay.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, that happens. It happens more than you think. Number one, stay on a regular schedule. Many problems can be prevented with solid routine maintenance, you know, just as it would be with your vehicle. Lack of playing on your part doesn't constitute an emergency on my end. I mean, when I have a full book and I have an owner that hasn't stayed on my schedule and, you know, now they want to get back in, I mean, it's going to be at least a 2-week wait. I can't just drop what I'm doing. So, and then my bonus, top 10 is, pay at the time of service. I mean, that's a given. We're not banks, and there's just nothing more aggravating for us than having to chase down people for money.
Do you even do that anymore?
Well,
I mean, the you as a whole, not you necessarily.
We're changing. You know, again, we're an evolving business. So, you know, while it is very traditional for, you know, folks to pay in checks, as we know with our online banking, this is at least how I've initially tackled this year without having to go credit card just yet. Although I can tell you that's on the horizon for me as well.
You could get one of those Square dongles and be taking credit cards tomorrow.
Correct. Yeah. And that's coming. I intend on adding that service in April. But at this point, with some of my, what I refer to as my paper owners, meaning that I never get to see them, and some of my owners I don't even know, again, all the invoicing now is done electronically now. So I encourage those folks to add me to their online banks as a payee. Because, you know, they've got the one window open, they're reading the email, click, click, next window opens, they're online with the bank, click, click, I'm paid. So so I'm actually getting quite a few checks mailed in that respect now. So that's actually picked up the pace for some of those folks.
Yeah, I didn't think about that whole Square deal for you guys, making it so easy and very inexpensive, actually, to take credit cards right there at the house.
You're exactly right. Glenn, I was talking with one farrier who's been using Square for about a year now, and he said it cut down his late payments by 60%. The other ones, he said, just still hide in the barn trying to avoid them.
That's where you guys need a tracking dog.
yeah.
Get the payment.
Yeah.
Well, very good. That was a good list. I hadn't thought about a few of those, so I learned something on that list. I don't know about you, Alina, but...
Oh, gosh, yeah. I was listening, like, enraptured.
That list is going to be in the American Farriers Journal next month. Right, Jerry?
Oh, really?
Well, this has been great. Thank you so much, guys. We've run out of time here. I really appreciate you both being on. Good luck at the meeting this year. You've been a lot of fun. Will you come back again sometime?
Absolutely.
We'd love it.
All right, terrific. Maybe about twice a year we should have you guys back on, because there's so much we could talk about.
Well, Jeremy didn't get to use his punchline. He wanted to tell you he was a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Now, unfortunately, you guys called me, so it didn't.
It didn't work. Nope. All right, thank you, guys. We appreciate you being on.
Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you.
Sorry for having us.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
The Barn Works is a small marketing firm which caters to equestrians. Whether you ride professionally, own or manage a boarding facility, sell horses, teach, train, show, or even sell retail goods, our business can help your business blossom. We offer services of all kinds, but what we do offer is focused on marketing your business in an efficient and effective way. Regardless of what creative marketing services you need, the Barn Works offers something that most other marketers don't: free consulting. That means if you don't know what you need or what will work best with your budget, we will sit down with you and figure it out together. No charge. Nada. Zip. Zero. And with over 20 years in corporate marketing experience, we have an idea about what works. And because we're fully immersed in the horse world, we know what works and what does not work in this crazy, wonderful industry of ours. Go to our website, at www.thebarnworks.com. You can see samples of our work and find out how to get in touch. Or just send an email to email@thebarnworks.com.
Do you have a company in the horse world? Are you looking to get the word out about your products, services, or shows? At the Horse Radio Network, we understand our advertisers need to reach the equestrian consumer in the most efficient, cost-effective way possible. Internet radio shows like this one, also called podcasts, allow the flexibility and creativity to craft unique messages that stand out from the herd and reinforce your existing marketing and social media strategies. If you want to learn more about advertising on this show or any of our shows on the Horse Radio Network, contact our account manager, Lisa, at 847-790-4476. That's Lisa at 847-970-4476, or you can drop her an email at lisa@horseradionetwork.com. Our listeners are terrific, engaged, and avid horse people, the ones that you are looking for. Well, thank you, Helena, and now it is time for Tech and Habit. Well, for our Tack and Habit segment today, we have Coach Jen of the Horse Tip Daily Show with us, who's going to do a review on a product she used at the Hunter Pace over the weekend. Good morning, Coach Jen.
Heidi Hody, I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted. I'm looking at all the really cool barn dog pictures on the Horses in the Morning Facebook page.
I know. Well, now tell us what the product is and what you thought of it.
I got to use my Christmas present this past weekend. I got a pair of field boots for Christmas because I had retired my last pair. They were just completely and totally worn out and they had to go bye-byes. And I had to find a pair of field boots that were economical because on a typical day-to-day basis, I don't wear boots to ride. It's Ocala, it's hot, and it's sandy. So I tend to wear my bootcut breeches and riding shoes. So I went to the local tack shop because I'm a pick-it-up-and-play-with-it buyer. And I came across a pair of field boots marked $71.95 in my size. So I thought, dang, got to try that. And lo and behold, I liked them. And they are the Tough Rider. Oh, is it Tough Rider Starter Field Boots?
That's great.
And yep. The typical retail is in the $71 to $75 range, depending on where you buy them. And they are not made of cowhide. They are what some people refer to as pleather, and I love them. They fit great, and they're really soft and squishy, and they look nice.
Yeah, they do. When you get 2 feet away, you can't. A matter of fact, from a foot away, I couldn't tell they weren't leather. So, and their back zip, which is I like Helena, by the way, because I don't have to help take them on and off.
That was his first question. That's all he cared about. He didn't care if they fit. He didn't care how much they cost. When I came home and said I found a pair of boots, he said, "Do they have zippers?" That's all I care about.
I love the price. Absolutely love the price. I mean, you never have to worry about them.
Well, you know, I have to take precautions. I do not expect the zipper to be particularly robust. So I am careful not to abuse the zippers, and they seem to be fine because I wear them about once a week just to make sure that, you know, they stay broken in. I do not expect them to last forever, and they are a little hotter than a pair of leather boots would be. They don't breathe like leather does, but they are much, 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 much more comfortable than a rubber boot would be because they're all stiff and crinkly. But for $71, I would call these an excellent value. For $71, they're very comfortable and they have a nice fit and they're very stylish. The cut of the boot is very nice so that they're not overly bulky through the ankle, and they have the nice Spanish top. So it's a nice tall boot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So it's chic looking, chic and affordable.
Very affordable for a pair of boots under $100. Way affordable. Yeah.
And okay. She didn't complain about having sore feet or blisters or anything, which I was really expecting. You know how you get it when you get new leather boots.
your break-in period is painful. So
yeah, these were soft. These were soft from when you first put them on. Yeah,
especially when you like the back of your ankles, like around your Achilles tendon. That's the worst.
Yeah. Or behind your knee. You know, that's we used to get complaints from when we had our tack shop. People used to bring boots back. You could count on if you sold leather boots, even good quality ones. Mm. You know, two weeks later, you were going to get a call, or the people were going to show up and say they don't fit. My leg hurts, and it's like, no, you haven't broke them in yet.
They don't fit.
So, you know, they had to get over that initial pain. So we started warning people: you got 2 weeks of pain coming. So.
Yeah. And then manufacturers started making products to help you get over the pain of the break-in period.
That's right.
They're smart. See, it's the mad
whole. Yeah, there's this whole submarket over pain relief.
I think the people who make salty fast food joint French fries are in cahoots with the people who make blood pressure medications.
Sure. It's all a big conspiracy.
I want to give a prize to the person who invented zippers on boots and then the second person who said, okay, yeah, we'll go with that and hopefully they'll adopt it someday. Thank God. When we had our tack shop, I was the one in charge of the boot section and had to help these women put on tall boots without the zips. They didn't have zips back then. They just started coming in. And my God, that was hard work. You know, that was really hard. I mean, and getting them off sometimes, because they always wanted sizes that were smaller than they really should have had, because you know, it's a woman thing. And there was one day we could not get the boot off. We had to cut it. Yep. We just couldn't get it off her leg. So it's like...
Then from forever afterwards, you kept a bottle of baby powder on hand, didn't you?
We did have a good stock of boot slip-on. Absolutely. We could have charged those people for chiropractic care.
Yeah,
you do. I mean, I've been that person, like where, and especially after you're done riding, when your legs are all hot and sweaty and swollen, you know, you can slip your boots. Like you go hunting in the morning, you're putting your boots on at 6 o'clock in the morning. Everything's all shrunk down and smooth and cold. And you spend 3 hours in the saddle and the sun comes up and now you're all hot and sweaty. That boot's on for the rest of the day.
It's not coming off.
Now, you've lost a lot of weight. Do your tall boots even fit anymore?
No, my tall boots do not fit.
Too baggy.
But I do have a pair of the zip-ups. I have their schooling boots. They're the Volants.
Oh, yeah.
The Volants. They're schooling boots. I could probably wear them in the show ring, but I like an all leather or all just one material look, you know, whether it's pleather or leather. This has the Volants have like panels, stretchy panels, and
they have the red
things. No, mine are all black.
All black, okay.
No,
because I think Jamie got the ones with the red on them, and you know that are really set in a fashion statement.
Yeah, that's a little too much for me.
Wear them in the ring. Wear them in the ring.
That's too...
Live on the edge. That's, come on.
No, if it's got, in New England, that she can't do that.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Hold on a minute here. Hold on a minute. Red pinstriping, no. But if I got a pair of boots with like sparkle or crystals, totally. If it sparkles, I'm all over it.
So you're willing to break the rules, but only if it includes precious gems.
Only if it makes me happy. I will break the rules if it makes me happy. Yes. Yes, that is no different than the way I live the rest of my life.
There you go. So I need to bedazzle my new boots.
Yes.
That's it. Well, thank you, Jennifer. We appreciate you being on. It's the Tough Rider Ladies Starter Back Zip Field Boots. You can find them at equestriancollections.com. We'll put a link in our show notes to them on stablescoop.com as well. And as Jennifer said, these are affordable, $71.95. You could even get these if you have a nice pair of leather boots for showing. You could get these for, you know, just bumming around and wearing every day. That would work as well. And don't forget, you can find Jennifer over at horsetipdaily.com, producing over 750 tips now. In all facets of the horse world with all different kinds of, probably hundreds of different guests. So you can find her over at horsetipdaily.com. Thank you, Jennifer.
See y'all.
Thanks, Jen.
Well, Helena, that's about it for this week. We've plain run out of time again. We'll be back again next week with more great stuff. And I totally lost my train of thought. It's my turn this time. Usually you screw up the end of the show. But
I always screw up the end of the show. I was ready this time. I was looking at my notes.
Well, thank you. I hope you have a terrific week. I hope it stays somewhat warm up there for you.
Yeah, we're having a little bit of a blizzard here right now, but, you know, whatever.
You know what, though? The days are starting to get longer already. You're on the down. You can see the light.
I am. My hands are gripping the sides of my desk chair right now. My knuckles are white, and I'm waiting impatiently for spring.
Now, do you go out to the beach at all in the winter, or is it just too cold?
No, actually, we do. We spend a lot of time at the beach in the winter. It's a good time, especially after winter storms. It's a good time to go and look for sea glass and other fun things. You just got to bundle up.
Needles and, you know, leftover waste.
Isn't that like Daytona Beach?
That's New York.
No, that's Daytona Beach there, buddy. New York, you know. No, in New York, like buses wash up. In 747.
Yeah, and unfortunately, especially after this last hurricane, we shouldn't be picking on New York.
No, they've had their share. Trust me, half of New Jersey's in the ocean right now. So.
Yeah, that's sad. All right, well, thank you, everybody. We appreciate you being here. And, of course, you can listen to all the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. And we'll talk to you again next week, Alina.
Until then, happy scooping.